Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvata Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sanyavadi Paschate Desha Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasti Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare from Srimad Bhagavatam chapter 16 verse 11. Shri Adityat,
Shri Adityat,
Uvacha,
Uvacha,
Bhadram,
Vija,
Vija, Gavam,
Gavam,
Brahman,
Brahman,
Dharmasya,
Dharmasya,
Dasya,
Janasya,
Janasya,
Cha,
Tri,
Tri,
Vargasya,
Vargasya,
Param,
Param,
Kshetram,
Kshetram,
Griha Medin,
Griha Medin,
Griha,
Griha,
Ime,
Ime.
Shri Aditya Uvacha,
Shri Aditya Uvacha,
Bhadra Dvija Gavam Brahman,
Bhadra Dvija Gavam Brahman,
Dharmasya Asya Janasya Cha,
Dharmasya Janasya Cha,
Shri Vargasya Param Kshetram,
Shri Vargasya Param Kshetram,
Griha Medin Griha Ime,
Griha Medin Griha Ime,
Aditya Uvacha, Bhadra Dvija Gavam Brahman, Dharmasyasya Janasya Cha, Shri Vargasya Param Kshetram, Griha Medin Griha Ime. Aditi said, O my respected Brahmana husband, all is well with the Brahmanas, the cows, religion, and welfare of other people. O Master of the House, the three principles of Dharma, Artha, and Kama flourish in household life, which is consequently full of good fortune. Purport: in household life, one can develop the three principles of religion, economic development, and sense gratification according to the regulations given in the Shastras. But to attain liberation, one must give up household life and place himself in the transcendental renounced order. Kashyapa Muni was not in the renounced order of life. Therefore, he is addressed here once as Brahman and another time as Griha Maiden. Aditi, his wife, assured him that as far as household life was concerned, everything was going nicely, and the Brahmanas and cows were being honored and protected. In other words, there were no disturbances. Household life was duly progressing. Translation: Aditi said, O my respected Brahmana husband, all is well with the Brahmanas, the cows, religion, and welfare of other people. O Master of the House, all the three principles of Dharma, Artha, and Kama flourish in household life, which is consequently full of good fortune. So in the Varnashram system, we have the different Varnas and Ashramas. And the largest Ashrama is the Grihastha Ashram. And we can say it's the most important in one sense also, because it supports all the other ashramas. We don't have a Grihastha ashram, the other ashramas can't exist, because the Grihasthas support the Brahmacharis by giving alms to the Brahmacharis when they beg for their food, and they give alms to the sannyasis and the vanaprasas when they're renounced. So the Grihastha ashram is the support of all the other ashramas. And of course we know that most of the people fall in the Sudra, Vaishya, and Kshatriya classes. Majority of any population at one time is Sudra. and next Vaishya, and there's a few Kshatriyas and fewer Brahmanas. And in the ashramas, the majority of the people are Grihasthas. The Sudras are the majority. They cannot take any ashram except Grihastha ashram. They don't become Brahmacharis, nor do they become Vanaprasthas or Sannyasis. So right there we have the majority as Grihasthas, because they're the majority. And of course the Vaishyas are not inclined to renounce also, so generally they're also Grihasthas. Kshatriyas take Vanaprastha if they're ideal. And we see in the Bhagavatam here how the great kings, such as Yudhisthira and his brothers, they renounced everything at a certain time and went off to the mountains. And Prithu Maharaj also did the same thing. Priyavrata also did the same thing. They all renounced their family life and went off with their wives to do austerities in the forest. So they took vanaprastha life. But in general, we see that most of the people stay as grihasthas. The brahmanas are allowed to take sannyas also. But that is only after going through grihastha life, then vanaprastha life, and then at the end they take a sannyas. So that's quite rare, actually, even for the brahmanas. Most of the society is made up of grihasthas, and they are the ones that work. They have an occupation. Grihastha has an occupation, and he works and supports his family, raises his family. And he's involved in these trivarga, dharma, artha, and kama. As Prabhupada mentions in the purport, the moksha, which is the fourth goal, is not the aim of the grihastha at that time. And he's preoccupied with these other things. And only when we get to vanaprasa and sannyas do we go for moksha in as a main item in our life. So the grihastha ashram is concerned with these principles, dharma, artha, and kama. These are the trivarga, or the three goals. I read one book once, supposedly on Dharma. Anyway, they one of the customs that they have is they wake up in the morning. You know, you do various rituals when you wake up. Recite prayers, offer your obeisances, clean your body out. There's so many things, and you see auspicious items like cows and fire and brahmanas and like that. And you avoid inauspicious items like one-eyed men or blind people or whatever, and outcasts, and you don't want to see the inauspicious things. You see auspicious things in the morning, whatever. And basically keep your mind pure in the morning. So one of the items was you look at your hand and then you look for the lines of artha, dharma, and kama and see how they're progressing in your life. So this is a concern of the married person, but at the same time there are limitations put on these things, and therefore we have a varnashram system. It's a system of regulation. Naturally, in any society or any human being, he has these goals in his life. A normal person, he has to support his body. So therefore he has to have a goal of artha. He has to somehow get some food and some shelter and whatever. That's artha. In order to survive in the material world, we need artha. That's what animals also need. In the human society, it's a little more regulated and indirect perhaps. But nevertheless, everybody has to get an occupation in order to get the artha as an adult. And as a child, it's supplied by the parents. When you're an adult, then you have to work to get your artha. So that involves the occupational duties. We have occupation of work for the men of society. They have to do that. So generally it's the men who do the work to get the artha for the family members. So that becomes a major effort in life. your job, your work. And we see that was in the Vedic system that was there. And it's also there in modern system. Everybody has to work. Everybody's forced to work, are they not? Except maybe unemployed. Unemployment insurance you get. But generally, you know, people work. They want to get any level of artha, they have to work hard. And everybody in society is doing that. So it's a natural principle. And of course, kama is also there. After we work, we don't want to work all the time. And of course, we get our bare necessities, whatever. But we usually want a little extra something. In other words, we can eat the bare minimum, but we may prefer to eat a little more, a better food. Or there's so much varieties of enjoyment we can get beyond the bare necessities of enjoyment. So all this is called kama, where we get extra things beyond our necessities. And this gets into all sorts of more complicated things in life, excesses, etc. So that is kama. And dharma is there to restrict the artha and the kama. Because in a society you cannot do anything you want to get your artha. You have to follow rule and regulation and respect other people, because other people are also getting their artha too. So there's rules and regulations of what to do and what not to do in society. And for kama also, there's do's and don'ts. How to fulfill your desires. So there's restriction on what you can do and what you cannot do. Certain things to eat, certain things not to eat. Yes, you can eat, but certain things, yes, certain things, no. One has sex life, but that is regulated also by rules and regulations within marriage, not outside marriage, etc. So dharma is there to give some restriction. One, to keep social stability. The other, of course, is the understanding that unrestricted sense enjoyment will degrade the individual and degrade the society. One will be unproductive, materially speaking. So, let's say physically, mentally, socially, everything, and one goes down by unrestricted sense gratification. So there is some restriction there. On the other hand, of course, we have the spiritual note that regulation of the senses and control of the mind is necessary in order to progress spiritually and develop spiritually. So this is the other side of the system. When we go for moksha, then we're going into spiritual life. So we need some regulation, even when we're involved in the grihastha ashram, in order to prepare ourselves for vanaprastha and sannyas. In other words, for spiritual life, we need some preparation of sense control. And therefore, the dharma principles are there, and a minimum of restrictions are there that we have to follow. And then when we go into vanaprastha and sannyas, then there's more restrictions on these senses. So these three principles are there in any society, but in a varnashram society, they're more specific. There's more rules and regulations than any other society in the world, actually. We'll see. If you examine any culture, you'll see they have some rules and regulations. Ultimately, there's some customs and things like that. And then the government has legal rules. And there'll be some religious rules put out by, you know, church or temple or whatever, and to follow. But we'll find that the most precise rules are there in the varnashram system. There's rules for every type of person. The sudra, the vaishya, kshatriya, brahman, grihastha, brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyas. All sorts of rules are there, regulating everything in life. But most of the rules, if we look, are for the grihastha. All the rules are there. Most of the rules are there for the grihastha. He has the most complex set of rules to follow in terms of obligations, etc. In other words, because he is involved in these material activities, and his license for kama is more, therefore he also has to have more restrictions to keep him safe. So therefore he has a lot of rules to follow in the Varnashram system. And of course the Varnashram system, ultimately the goal is not simply to have a prosperous society, but to elevate the person to spiritual life. So therefore the rules and regulations under the able Kshatriya, or king, gradually leads the people up to spiritual life in a very gradual process. So in other words, we have Artha, Dharma, and Kama, and then finally leading up to Moksha. So this is the, here is described, Aditya is speaking here about the, household life is prospering with the three principles here. Three principles are there. But one can never forget the fourth principle, especially for the higher castes, especially the Kshatriya and the Brahmana. They can never forget the fourth goal, or for the Vaishnava, the fifth goal, prema. We can never forget the spiritual goal and the whole system. So even for the Grihastha, though they concentrate on Artha, Dharma, and Kama, they also have to have an understanding they're going towards spiritual life and towards moksha. And therefore, when they get older, they have to start renouncing everything. So the scriptures say that when the man is 50 years old, then he should renounce everything. In other words, he should finish up his household life, make sure that the children are grown up, educated, and they have an occupation. And the children, therefore, can support the wife, whatever. Then he can be free. Or, alternatively, you can take the wife and they can do vanaprastha life together. And free the children. They're off on their own. That's at the age of 50. Of course, there's different prescriptions. In one place in Shastra, it says when the husband's hair goes gray, then he should renounce. Assuming it goes gray after 50. And another Shastra says when the children have grandchildren. Well, they have children. In other words, when you have grandchildren, then that's the time to renounce. In other words, when the children are married, when they've got their children, they're supporting their family, then it is time for the husband and wife to say goodbye and let them be on their own and, you know, go off and do austerities in the forest. So the encouragement is there that one should do this, one should renounce. Now, it looks very austere, of course, and if you look at the Shastras, the Vanaprastha life is quite austere. They live in the forest, they put on clothing made out of bark, which is very prickly. It doesn't feel very nice, so your body is always uncomfortable no matter what you do. They sleep on the ground, on the bare cold ground. They have a small cottage made out of grass or leaves. It's quite cool. And they generally don't even eat cooked food. They eat raw foods, roots found in the forest, or fruits in the forest. So it's a very, very austere life. The whole purport of that, the whole goal is to let them get used to simple life and get them detached from their Grihastha life, where they had all sorts of nice comforts and family and all this around them. So they have to forget that sooner or later. And if they have this attachment, they can never get moksha. So living an austere life like this helps them forget this. They don't see the children anymore. So after a while, they'll forget about them. But if they continue to associate, they'll never forget them. They always have that attachment. So by separation, not seeing them, then gradually they become detached. And similarly, if they live simply, then they become detached from the comforts of life. They get used to simple things, and they don't care about the body too much anymore. They become detached from the body, detached from relationships with other people. So that is the whole idea behind the Vanaprastha ashrama. So of course, detachment in itself is not the goal. Otherwise, we simply become my bodies, impersonalness. We become detached from everything, then we get mukti. For the Vaishnava, the real goal is to become attached to the Supreme Lord. So along with that detachment or cultivation of austerity, one should also cultivate the attachment to the Lord through the process of bhakti, devotional service. So that is why for the Vaishnava, we don't consider that practicing austerities is a part of bhakti, as an anga of bhakti. Because it doesn't directly cultivate attraction to Krishna. And on the other hand, if it's practiced as independently, it tends to be unfavorable for the development of bhakti, because it leads in the towards impersonalism, more or less. The Vaishnavas do not separately cultivate austerities, but or vairagya, detachment, but it is inherent in the process of bhakti itself. By becoming more attracted to Krishna, then naturally we're more detached from material things. At the same time, we cannot use the excuse, because bhakti is a natural process of renunciation, therefore until that happens I can indulge my senses as much as possible. We cannot give that excuse either. Because if we do so, then we'll never develop any attraction to Krishna, nor detachment from material things. So we have some minimum type of vairagya or detachment that we practice, which means the four regulative principles. At least we go to that stage. And that's our initial level of vairagya or detachment from the material world. And at the same time, we practice the activities of devotional service to give us an attraction for Krishna. And in that process, we naturally become detached from material things. The process of bhakti is considered to be natural detachment or renunciation. And for that reason, we don't emphasize so much the externals of the Varnashram system, and the ashramas as such. Because the process of bhakti itself, inherent in it, is detachment. If one is attached to Krishna, you cannot be attached to sense gratification. Because attachment to Krishna means that I do something for Krishna, and only for Krishna, and not anything for myself. So that excludes sense gratification in the very act of a devotional service. We say, ani abhilasha ja shunya, devoid of other desires, except the desire to please Krishna. Anukunyan Krishna anusilanam. Activities directed towards Krishna, with an intention of pleasing Him, and no other desire. So therefore, when we do an act of devotional service, then there is no other desire there. There can be no desire of anything for ourselves. So what is the question of sense gratification there? It's only for Krishna. Of course, in the beginning stages, we don't do devotional service all the time, and therefore we're not pure devotees. But we're trying to, and therefore when we perform each act of devotional service, our intention is to try to please Krishna. To that extent, we have no personal sense gratification. But it's not continuous. So therefore it's a matter of degrees. But the perfection finally in prema is only for Krishna and for nothing, and no other interest there except pleasing Krishna. So then there's no possibility of sense gratification at all. No possibility of attachment to anything in the material world or material body. So that is the stage of prema, complete perfection. We don't start like that, however. We start with a little faith and we do sadhana bhakti. So attachments are still there, whatever. But we have a little bit of inclination towards the Lord, so that is enough to give us a little bit of purity in some of our acts of devotional service. And that's the beginning. And by doing more and more of these activities, gradually the attraction to Krishna increases and the attachment to material things decreases. So this is our process. We start with maybe 1% for Krishna, 99% for Maya. And we go through sadhana bhakti, and then we get to 50% Krishna, 50% enjoyment or material enjoyment. And then we go up to 80% or 90% for Krishna, 10% for Maya. And then in perfection, it's 100% Krishna, zero for Maya, nothing. No more enjoyment, only for Krishna. And for the materialist, Krishna is 100% for Maya, only. So therefore, this is the process itself of surrendering to Krishna implies automatic detachment from the material world. So therefore, the practice of vairagya and detachment is not done separately. So we don't emphasize in particular the ashram status in itself. And it goes along, if it is favorable for the performance of bhakti, fine. But not independently of the varnashram system. So anyway, the grihastha is in his ashram, grihastha ashram. And prosperity means artha, dharma, and kama are sufficient. And therefore the person is happy. Of course, everyone likes the artha and the kama, but dharma also has to be there. To restrict and do everything in the proper way. And this ensures that later on one can take the decision to renounce and become more austere, more serious about spiritual practice and develop in that direction also. Therefore, that in the grihastha ashram, there always has to be the goal also, besides these three principles, the fourth or the fifth goal has to be also implicit there. Otherwise we'll have a system, an asura varnashram system. We'll have a class system, and we'll have the different material goals outlined, and we'll have dharma also in subservience of artha. To the extent that we have to control people to get the artha, we will have dharma. And we'll have rules and regulations of control of people so that the artha doesn't get disturbed. So this is the dharma of the material world. However, we see in the Vedic system that the fourth goal is also there, that we have to ultimately get rid of all this. And therefore the dharma is used not just to control people, but actually to develop, help us to develop to the fourth stage of getting out of the material world, to become detached and go beyond. So this is, though the grihastha ashram has this, you know, emphasis upon living in the material world, also the idea of detachment must be there to some degree. And that is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was with advising Raghunath Das, he told him, "You live in your house." When Raghunath Das tried to run away, then Lord Chaitanya sent him back. He said, "You live in your house, in your grihastha ashram." He had a wife. He had mother and father. Mother and father were very attached to him. And he tried to grab him all the time and bring him back every time he ran away. So that he wanted to surrender to Lord Chaitanya, so he kept running away. And Lord Chaitanya kept sending him back and said, you stay in your household life. It's not time. You take care of your family, whatever, your wife. Says you enter your house, but don't become mad. Do not become overcome by the artha and the kama. So you restrict yourself there also. And when you reach the stage of sufficient disinterest, then you can go. So therefore we also don't artificially renounce. And therefore we still have the ashramas. We accept the ashram, different ashrams, including grihastha ashram. But within that we have to understand there has to be some sort of detachment also. And some minimum detachment has to be there in order that we develop spiritually. So, any question then? Oh, I see. It's a little bit complicated when we have an institution also involved in the whole thing. the institution covers everybody within that. Then we have the grihasthas and the brahmacharis and the vanaprasas and the sannyasis working. So it's a little bit different from the regular varnashram system. Somewhat different anyway. I suppose the varnashram exists to the extent, to some extent, in that we do have people and we need a social system. We need some sort of rule and regulation, and where everybody does their duty, everybody gets their sustenance, and everybody gets their protection. And that's basically what a varnashram system does. It guarantees the needs of all the different groups of people. So obviously that's necessary even in our society, that everybody has to get support. The family has to get their support. The other ashramas have to get their support also. And at the same time, they have to do the particular duties there. They have different responsibilities. They have to perform those responsibilities also. So we need artha. Definitely we need artha. There has to be some way in which we get sustenance for all the different people, the shelter for the grihastha, the shelter for the brahmachari, the whatever, sannyasi, etc. That has to be there. Kama, of course, is there to some extent, especially in the grihastha ashram for raising family. That has to be limited. And, of course, the principles of dharma are there also. We have to have dharma. So Bhagavatam says that to the extent that we still have material attachment, to that extent we have to follow the rules of varnashram. So as long as we're in the material world and we're still less advanced, then to some degree we have to follow. And therefore most of the people will naturally fit into one of these groups, just by the nature, because nobody is completely detached. So they'll fit into one of these groups. How to implement it exactly, of course, I don't know. But because we are a society, therefore, with people in it, therefore, there has to be rules and regulations, responsibilities, needs fulfilled, etc. It has to be there. At the same time, the goal, the responsibility of our society ultimately is the spiritual aspect of it. We put more emphasis on that than other things. But at the same time, because we do involve people, then we also have to take care of their needs. To that extent, then we have to have the varnashram system. But of course, the spiritual aspect, we say, is beyond the varnashram system.
The Bhagavat Marg and Varnashram Marg, how are they related as far as this one is concerned?
Well, Bhagavata Marga is, of course, maybe that's a transcendental thing. Technically means taking shelter of the holy name as the main principle of spiritual development. This is usually the usual context of the Bhagavata Marga is Pantratrika, which is a more formal process in which you take initiation, you worship the deity. This is the usual comparison, Bhagavata Marga and Pantratrika Marga. Bhagavata Marga does not require initiation because you don't need initiation to chant Hare Krishna, and you don't have to worship the deity, it's simply to chant the holy name. That's the main means of advancement. Whereas in Pantratrika Marga, one depends on deity worship for advancement. And to do the deity worship, you need deity mantras, Vaishnava mantras, which are the Pantratrika mantras we get at Diksha. So we have this system. And generally we follow both, though our predominantly we're Bhagavat Marga in one sense, because we emphasize the holy name. We do have within bhakti worship of the deity also as an important anga, so therefore for that we have to get the Pantratrika Marga also. And Jiva Goswami says that because we are our minds or our hearts are disturbed, therefore we have to engage the senses So though technically we get to chant Hare Krishna, we should engage ourselves more. So therefore we should do deity service. Therefore we should take Diksha and do Pancharatrika Seva also. To engage ourselves. Apart from that, then we have the Varnashram system. As I said, the Varnashram system is there to support the body, basically. Well, not body, mind, society, social needs. These are things for the Varnashram system. So technically, on the purest level of bhakti, you don't need them. In prema, you don't care about your body or your society or anything anymore. You don't care about Krishna. So therefore, there's no question of Varnashram for that person. That is called the Paramahamsa Yogi. There it is. Completely detached from everything. However, people are not at that stage usually, so we do have to participate to some degree. In the Garthan Vaishnava tradition, the Babaji is technically also beyond the Varnashram system. He does not wear any clothing or any sign of Varnashram system. So technically he should be a Paramahamsa Yogi. But other than that, then all the other people, the devotees, are functioning as within the Varnashram system. In Lord Chaitanya's movement, generally they were grihasas. All the different followers were generally married. There, of course, there were some sannyasis in Lord Chaitanya's time. After that, we didn't see any sannyasis, but in Lord Chaitanya's time there were. After that, mainly grihasas. Brahmacharis, we don't see much of either. Mainly it was all grihasta ashram. And then they have to follow. They're following as far as supporting themselves, supporting their family, rules for raising a family, rules for occupation, rules for purity, etc. They follow the Varnashram system for artha, dharma, kama, all this. They're following that. To the extent that we are still materially attached, to that extent we have to follow some rules of our Varnashram system. Now the Grihastha is there, and in the Vedic system, before one becomes a Grihastha, then one should also get educated spiritually. So therefore one has a Brahmacharya ashram for that also. Necessary, because if one is not educated or trained properly, one cannot be a proper Grihastha. So therefore naturally the Brahmacharya and the Grihastha ashram more or less go together, and one leads to the other. And then later on one takes, you know, vanaprastha sannyas. We see in the Gaudiya tradition previously that generally, of course, you have the Grihastha ashram. Brahmachari ashram was not so much evident, I think, at that time when Lord Chaitanya was around, and probably died out by then. And going to the Gurukul and studying separately doesn't seem to be a tradition anymore there, in Bengal at least. So that had died out. So basically, it was the Grihastha ashram. And sannyas also rather rare. However, we see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur introduced Varnashrama type system with the brahmacharis in the ashram and the grasses outside, and then sannyas ashram also there in the temple. Reason, of course, is to define the duties more clearly, define things more clearly, and to give some definition to the organization. It's an organization, so then you get specific duties to do and specific rules and regulations. So natural to take up the Varnashram rules and regulations. You have Brahmacharya rules and regulations, or sannyasa rules and regulations, grihastha rules and regulations. Therefore, in an organization, we can say those rules are convenient to follow and necessary also. As far as, you know, we're not completely detached to that extent, we should follow.
It seems that Prabhupada's idea of ISKCON is more or less a medical institution. You know, but obviously not everybody's on that, you know. mm-hmm. can actually engage in meaningful activities.
Yeah.
So, I guess over the years it's seen that more and more that ashram isn't just naturally evolving because mm-hmm. not everybody.
Different people have different abilities or what, different gunas or whatever, yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, ultimately we take everybody as transcendental in the ideal sense, and everybody is not blemished by varna in his execution of devotional service. However, as far as, let's say, material activities, we do have the artha. Mainly the problem is the artha. That one has to get material support, and then one has to engage in some activity which is suitable to one to do that, to one's abilities to do that. That basically, that's the, I see as the main element there. That the varna becomes important because of one's necessity to support oneself and carry out a job, basically. Yeah. If we didn't worry about a job, we wouldn't worry about this so much. Yeah? But everyone has to have some sort of occupational duty, either outside in the material world or within the society. Some function he has to perform and do work, yeah? Like that, according to his abilities. To that extent, I guess we have the we have to work according to abilities. But at the same time, we don't overemphasize it, that one is limited by that. It's natural one can do what one is capable of according to one's talent. That much we should recognize. But that one is limited by that and labeled by that as a sudra Vaishnava or a Vaishnava. That we don't want to do. Because that's putting a material limitation on the person, when through devotional service one should transcend the gunas and his limitations. But just for emergency sake, we have to engage according to our present talents, whatever. So therefore we have these different engagements. So to that extent we follow our ashram. But it's not so strict as the traditional system, where it's quite set. Your father was this, and you're this, and that's how you have to work. of course, in the Varnashram system, they do say, even Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad Gita also, one should work according to one's gunas. One should not go beyond that and do too much, aspire for too much. And then, of course, the other principles, you should not do too little either. You shouldn't go below your goodness and work lower than your qualification. That's laziness. And you should not go above your qualification. That's being overambitious and will simply result in failure. Mm-hmm. Huh? So you work to your capacity, to your limit, basically. Yeah? You utilize your talents and your abilities and your energy to the maximum in a productive way. Basically, that's what it means, the Maharashtra system.
Does that take a lot of practice to be able to do that? Right, so you know, to get it balanced?
Well, everything takes practice, I suppose, isn't it? Even like in school, all they do is they practice over and over, the children, just to do anything, you know. Even if they got ability, they still got to do something. You still got to practice something. Some are better than others, of course, and more intelligent children will, with certain abilities, go in one direction. Others may have a nature, but they don't have to practice so much, but they have to do something, you know. If you want to do anything good, you have to practice it to some degree. Even if you're a genius, or even if you're a prodigy, a child prodigy in music, you still practice, you know. So there has to be some training, nevertheless. And for the normal person who's not a genius or a prodigy, of course, they have to practice more. Anything you're going to do. Even if they have some talent, they still have to practice. So it requires training, definitely.
Well,
that's another thing, that how to find the balance there between the the artha and the the artha, the kama, the dharma, and the moksha. That's why Lord Chaitanya said, you enter the house but you don't become mad, basically. So there's a limit of over endeavor in the material sphere, that we shouldn't get involved in that. In other words, we carry out our duties but we take care that we preserve our spiritual strength at the same time. So we don't neglect the duties, but we don't get overcome by them to the extent that we neglect our spiritual duties. And so keep a balance there.
One day you couldn't do it, then you just make an arrangement for the wrong time.
Yeah. Always have to be flexibility. And you know, how we practice. The emergencies are there all the time in the material world.
Does that mean we shouldn't try to shoot rhinoceroses?
Well, one can be ambitious, but of course we have to also profit in one sense. Yeah, you can do that. Huh? but one cannot, it has to be a little practical also. In other words, we cannot take risks every day and waste so much time on impractical things also. So we can take chances sometimes, definitely, and aspire. We have aspiration, obviously, and we have goals also. At the same time, we have to be a little practical on how to achieve them. We don't want to discourage anybody from having ambitious goals, but they may be unpractical in the sense that incapable of achieving them. One of our, in the first 20 angas of devotional service, which are the door to bhakti, the other rules and regulations, one of them is don't endeavor for big projects. Bhaktivinoda gives a big commentary on that in one book, and he says that over endeavor means that you don't have the time, in the sense your lifespan's too short to accomplish it. So you're an old man, why get involved in a big project you're never going to finish? It may be a 20 year project and you've got 5 years left of your life, so what's the use of doing it? So you should have the proper number of years left in your life to do it. You should have proper energy. If you're sick and old, why get involved in something that's going to take a lot of activity that you can't do? You should have finances. If you don't have a source of finances or some guarantee that you're going to get the money, why risk it and then fall into debt for the rest of your life? You should have manpower. So all of these things are factors there. If you don't have these things, then it's called over-endeavor. You have no guarantee of finance, manpower, abilities, whatever. you can try it, but you probably just waste your time doing it. So first you should get a little guarantee that things are there. And therefore we see that, for instance, in spite of these rules that Rupa Goswami wrote, he did build a big temple there. You have in Vrindavan, we have Radha Govinda temple and Madan Mohan temple, all these big temples there. But we see that they didn't endeavor at all. They did it because people were willing to do it. They didn't have to oversee the construction and this and that, or the money at all. The money was offered, and the man said, "Oh, we'll build it." And so they built it. So no over endeavor on his part. There was people, abilities, everything was there. So they didn't have to waste their energy on those endeavors, and it could be completed very nicely. So and therefore we have to be a little careful in how we extend ourselves. We do that, and then we distract ourselves from bhakti in the process when we get big endeavors. Okay, Hare Krishna.